Hey, everybody, what's up? This is the original ECW original, Bay Ragney, otherwise known as Chubby Dudley. And guess what? This is Extreme.
Beat me if you can. Survive if I let you.
Procuring nevermore.
Let the new era begin. The era of the ECW.
Oh, my God.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to This is Extreme, an ECW history podcast. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us for this episode. I'm glad you guys are excited about our return. The episodes have been fun, I think. You guys have really been turning out and listening. The numbers have been good, which is not the main reason I do it, but it's always nice to know that there's some validation and some people out there that enjoy what I'm doing here with this. Again, this is an ECW history podcast. We try to talk to people associated with it, with ECW, cover events, dates, title changes, events, all that kind of stuff. So it's a different approach, right? There's plenty of watch-along shows out there, and that's not what we're doing here, right? We're going to take a deep dive and look at history-type aspects. If you guys are looking for a companion podcast that does the watch-along thing, I would suggest checking out Reliving the Extreme on the We Can't Wrestle podcast network. Reliving the Extreme is a great podcast. It's a lot of fun. So go check that out if you're looking for a companion watch-along podcast. Now, today's episode, we have the one and the only Chubby Dudley on here. He was one of the early members of the Dudley family in ECW, and we talk all about that, his time in ECW, his memories, his stories. It is a great interview. Very, very fun. I was so glad to have him on. And hopefully, you know, in the future, maybe we can have him on again and tell some more stories, because I think there's plenty more to talk about. Before we get there, though, there's some news and whatever that we need to talk about. And the first thing I want to talk about is there's a company, Rush Toys or Rush Collectibles, who for a long time have had some pictures out there, some teasers out there of some ECW-inspired figures. Now, not just inspired, right? These are of ECW wrestlers, managers, characters. But they were also supposed to be in the scale and articulation of the old ECW original San Francisco Toymaker figures. So basically, it's kind of a continuation of that line, right? So very, very cool. I love that concept that, you know, those are fun figures, man. I love those figures. And to get some other wrestlers and stuff that we didn't have in that line that are in scale and fit right in with that line is a great thing. Well, I've spoke with them a little bit, and they have confirmed that those Extreme figures are still being planned for the future. As a matter of fact, they have an Instagram account now set up just for those figures, for that line, and it's very exciting, right? There's finally some development on this. It looks like they're getting ready to happen. Like I said, they will be produced in the style and size of the ECW old San Francisco Toymakers figures. The Instagram account that I spoke of is at Extreme Ring Master. So go follow that on Instagram for all the latest on this line. But they did tell me that the eight wrestlers that were scheduled to be in that line are still all going to be produced. All those agreements are still in place, and that they will still produce those eight. And those are the unreleased Sabu that was shown in some of the ads and whatever else. Joel Gertner, Mikey Whipwreck, Blue Meanie, C.W. Anderson, Bill Alfonso, Simon Diamond, and Sign Guy Dudley. Those are all still being produced. They have also announced that the Al Snow figure is also going to be produced. So that's the ninth figure in this line. No word yet on the exact timetable. No word yet on, you know, if it split the series, who's going to come first, whatever else. But we do know those figures are officially coming. Speaking of figures, the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast have announced that they have the Major Extreme Bendies. It is Sabu, Tommy Dreamer, Raven, Sandman. Those four, there are regular versions and bloody versions. These are made in the style of the old Bendoms figures. And those figures are available now for pre-order at majorpodmerch.com. They're very cool. Like I said, there's regular and bloody versions. They're very, very cool looking. So go check those out. Pre-order those if that's your thing. Also, on August 27th, before we get into that, let's talk about a couple other things. We'll save that for just a moment. WWE has filed the trademarks for CyberSlam, Barely Illegal, and Massacre on 34th Street. It's not known the intent and reasoning behind the filing, if they're going to do something with it or what this is. It could just be to protect those names so that AEW or another organization can't use them. But they have filed for those trademarks. Some kind of cool news. Bully Ray and D-Von Dudley, or Bubba Ray and D-Von Dudley, will reunite for the first time in 7 years on Impact Wrestling's 1,000th episode on September 9th in White Plains, New York. So if you're in that area, go check that show out, that recording, that TV taping out. This is going to be a very, very cool event. And if you can't attend the event itself, make sure you check out that episode of Impact Wrestling to see the reunion of those two. Now, like I was started to say, and I wanted to say, for August 27th marked the 29th anniversary of the birth of Extreme Championship Wrestling. That is the day of the NWA title tournament that was held. And on that date, Shane Douglas defeated Two Cold Scorpio in the tournament final to win the NWA title. And we all know the story. After the match, Douglas threw down the NWA belt, saying he didn't want to be champion of a dead, quote-unquote, dead promotion. Douglas then declared the ECW title to be a world title and called it the ECW World Heavyweight Championship. And then on the August 30th, 1994 episode of NWA Extreme Championship Wrestling TV, Todd Gordon folded Eastern Championship Wrestling and formed Extreme Championship Wrestling independent of the NWA. So it's kind of that's the anniversary, right, of the official start of Extreme Championship Wrestling. And of course, the roots go back, through Eastern Championship Wrestling. In my, talkings, what I do in my reviews, I include the Eastern Championship Wrestling, of course, because it's the same company essentially. But that does officially start, the Extreme Championship Wrestling with the name that we all know and love. So a little history there. So anyway, of course, you guys are all, ECW fans. If you're listening to this, go check out all those figures. Kind of do a deep dive. We had Todd Gordon on a couple of episodes ago. Go read his book for a little more about that title tournament and the birth of Extreme Championship Wrestling. There's some great stories in there for that. So go check out the book, Todd is God. But let's take a quick break now. And like I said, when we come back, we will have that interview with Chubby Dudley.
Be sure to follow This Is Extreme on all social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for ECW Pod. Be sure to follow us, keep up to date, and join in the discussions. We want to hear your feedback, so find us on all the social media platforms and join the revolution.
This is Extreme. All right, and welcome back to This Is Extreme. And at this point, we are joined by an ECW star straight from Dudleyville, Chubby Dudley. Chubby, how you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
I am very, very good. I'm excited to talk to you, talk about your career, your time in ECW a little bit. Tell us some stories. Always a good time. Let's start from the beginning. You were trained by Larry Winters, who was a mainstay on the Eastern Independence. So what was it like working with him and training with him? Larry was kind of an unheralded talent in my book.
Yeah, you know what? He's somebody who was definitely a legend in the Philadelphia area, and he never got like his just due or credit because he was such an important part of the history of the whole world of hardcore wrestling and extreme wrestling. And I think he gets overlooked big time. I mean, he was a guy, I don't even know if you know this one, but back in the days of Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, he had a broken ankle, and during his match, he cut his cast off and used it in a match. So you don't get many guys like that who's that hardcore.
Yeah, he's kind of one of those guys that was there in the early days of ECW, the Eastern days, and then, like you said, in Tri-State, but kind of didn't survive the transition over when kind of Paul Lee took over. He kind of got phased out. I mean, Paulie had his guys from New York, I guess, and whatnot. But I always liked Larry Winters. I always enjoyed him. Thought they could have. I think he would have transitioned over all right if they kept him around. I think he could have made the transition.
See, you know what? Like as I'm doing this new channel now that I've been doing, React and Chill with Chubby Dudley, where I'm doing going through and watching the history of ECW TV and doing reactions to it and my opinions and whatever backstories I know. Watching, I'm only As a matter of fact, today I'm going to be taping from episode 11 of TV. But watching these old matches, I kind of think the opposite. Like I say it many times, like you can see why, you know, a lot of guys in the early days, myself especially included, we just were not we just didn't have that talent to really be that mainstream and main event type caliber stuff to which ECW became. And sadly, as talented as Larry was, I don't think he would have been a mainstay star in the ECW unless he had a great gimmick or something that Paulie would have came up with him. But I think from just you know, his in-ring talent, because something with Larry that always rung out, and I say it sometimes when I see his matches on TV, you know, when Larry was teaching me, one of his big things was he would try not to bump. And even like going back to those TWA days and the early ECW days, you know, it was like kind of an ongoing joke with Larry, like, how many bumps did he take in the ring? Like, could he go through a match with taking like one bump or less, you know? So he wouldn't have been that guy who was willing to go above and beyond and put his body on the line like some of us other knuckleheads did.
Yeah. Yeah, we talk about those early days of ECW. A lot of people may not realize you were there, right? In those Eastern days as Easy Rider.
Right? Yeah,
half of the Hell Riders with HD Rider. So what was that? How did that HD? How'd you get that Easy Rider gimmick? And how did the Hell Riders thing come about?
So again, going back to Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, where I was trained with, you know, Larry and those guys. I started wrestling school in September of '90, and you know, as I was going through and waiting to come up with the gimmick, we couldn't come up with anything. And I always wanted to be kind of like a gorgeous Jimmy Garvin. I used to love Jimmy Garvin's gimmick where he would just come out. It's not my fault. I wanted to do something like that. And I wanted to be Beautiful Bay. Mm. And nobody would say yes to it. So then, you know, a year and a half in, I actually had broken my ankle in my training in the ring, and I was out for about 6 months. But when I came back in that meantime, HD Ryder had started his training, and HD was an older guy. He was at the time, I think, mid-30s, or yeah, I think I was 20, 21 years old. He was early mid-30s. And he was just doing it because he just wanted to do it for fun. It was something he always wanted to do. Yeah. But he was a true, legit biker, rode a Harley and everything. So he already had his gimmick in.
Yeah.
And I showed up like one day wearing a biker leather, and they were like, here we go. Maybe we can do a tag team. And actually, Johnny Hotbody's the one that came up with the names. He said for HD, he would be HD Rider. And then for me, it was – he kept saying Mitch Rider. And I'm like, no, that don't make no sense. I'm like, Easy Rider, like the movie, like the magazine. So it became Easy and HD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, about to mention, wasn't there a musician, Mitch Rider?
That's why he kept saying it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well – so you did that for a while, kind of got, you know, kind of disappeared for a bit. And then you came back to ECW in 95 as Chubby Dudley.
Yeah.
And this was early in the days of the, I mean, you predate Bubba and this stuff. So I think when you came in, it was, what was it? It was Big Dick, Snot, Dudley. Were they still around when you came in? Or?
So Little Snot was gone. That's how the whole thing opened up. He was in a car accident. I never ever even met Little Snot.
Okay.
So it was Dudley and Big Dick Dudley, and the night I debuted was the same night that Dances with Dudley debuted. So we debuted the same night, and it was against the Steiners.
Oh.
So it was him and Big Dick against the Steiners, and I just remember being on the outside of the ring, being like, please don't let me take a Frank Steiner. Please don't let me take a Frank Steiner, because I was like, I know I'm going to screw it up, and then like, Scott's going to kick my ass.
Yeah. So how'd you come up with the name Chubby Dudley? Who gave that to you? Was that a Paul Lee thing?
Yeah. So what happened was, again, going back to wrestling school, I went to wrestling school with Stevie Richards, was always close with Richards. And, so it's funny because like he was the very first match in ECW history.
Right.
It was him and Jimmy Jannetty, and Jimmy Jannetty is the one who finished both his and my training. And they had a 20-minute Broadway. It was the opening match in ECW history. And we, you know, like I said, we remained friends and we were always training together. And as I had gotten phased out, somehow he got back in. And I forget how it was, but he got back in as Stevie Richards, hooked up with Raven. Mm-hmm. And everybody really taken to a liking to him. And, I mean, without a doubt, from day one, from the time he stepped in the ring in wrestling school, the dude was just giftedly talented for the wrestling business.
Yeah.
So he, when the Dudley thing happened, I remember literally sitting there on a Tuesday night watching the show and the Dudleys debuted. And I said to myself, I was like, oh shit, I look exactly like a Dudley. Like, I would fit perfectly. And like 2 weeks later, Richards called me up. He's like, yo, we got this new Dudley gimmick. I think you would be perfect for it. I told Raven about it. He's like, are you interested? I'm like, of course, hell yeah. So he said, all right, come to the hotel this weekend after the shows, and I'll introduce you to Paul. And I met him down at the Philadelphia Airport Marriott, which at the time was the stomping grounds before the switch to the Travel Lodge. I'm in the lobby and I'm talking with Richards, and up comes Paul. And before Richards even introduces me, Paulie goes, oh my God, another fucking Dudley. And Richards is like, see, this is the guy I was telling you about. So Paul said to me, he goes, hey, he goes, do you have a tie-dye shirt? I said, no. He goes, get a tie-dye shirt. He's like, what do you think your name should be? And again, going back to the Beautiful Bay thing, I was like, Studley Dudley. He's like, yeah, no, not going to happen. How about Chubby Dudley? Bring food, bring a tie-dye, and you're in. I'm like, awesome. And that's how it happened.
Cool. Yeah, well, and you, like I said, you didn't wrestle a whole lot, really. You kind of mostly accompanied the other Dudleys. Did you know that when you kind of come in, were you kind of told you it was going to be that accompanying the others, not wrestling much, or was it just kind of a each night fly by the seat of the pants type of thing?
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. It was more or less like I came in and I truly thought I was going to be wrestling. Mm-hmm. So as I, you know, initially was part of just the sideshow, I was like, all right, well, you know, I'm paying my dues. They're looking for something to open up. And, you know, at that point, I realized, too, you know, DW was a much better worker than me. So I was like, all right. And I knew Big Duck Dick was the focal point because he was like the fatherly figure of the bunch. But then when Bubba came in, Bubba was really green. And I'm like at ringside and I'm watching this stuff and I'm saying to myself, like, well, I could work better than Bubba. Like, what's the deal here? So I started like thinking, all right, I can see the writing on the wall. Like, and then Devon came in and I'm like, okay. So then at that point, like I knew the writing on the wall and I just kind of went with it because I was, you know, honored to be there. I knew it was something special going on and it was a magical moment in wrestling history. And I was a big, huge fan of the product. Mm-hmm. And plus it was getting all the perks of being part of ECW. I'm on TV almost every week. I'm in magazines. I mean, I would go out to like I was working delivering pizza during the day, and I would be like delivering pizza, and like kids would be like, "Aren't you Chubby Dudley?" Or I would literally there was times like kids or people are watching ECW, and I'm at their door, and they're like looking at me like, "Wait," you know. So and, or I'd be walking through the mall and getting stopped for autographs. So I was like, you know what? Like it's worth it because my name is getting out there, and I'm getting the exposure. And the most important thing I really learned at that point in career is how important TV is. And that's for any form of entertainment, especially back then, you know, there was no internet really. Yeah. So TV, it was everything.
Right. Yeah. And you talked about Devon coming in, right? And when he came in, he was doing that. Oh, we're going to, you know, get the Dudleys back. They're not these comedic things, right? We're going to, they're these badasses and everything else. Did you, when that started in, did you kind of feel, they're going to maybe phase me out with the comedic thing, you know, kind of, you know, moving aside? Did you have any sense that you were on your kind of way out, or did you just think it was just rolling like normal?
Well, you know what? Like, nothing was ever truly discussed with me personally about my character. It was more or less my own stuff or friends of mine in the business, or even somebody like, you know, like a Bubba or somebody would say, hey, how about do this or how about do that? It was never, you know, Paul or Dreamer or Taz never gave me any direction in the character. And also, too, I think I ruffled, I probably definitely ruffled feathers early on, because I guess it was a few months in, maybe even 6 months in, you know, because I was not wrestling in ring. And I was very, very close friends, good friends with Dennis Caraluzzo, who was the number one competition of ECW. And they were, was a bitter, bitter enemies, a whole thing going on between his NWA promotion and ECW. And I used to like hang out with Dennis during the week, like one or two nights a week, go to dinner. And I used to help him with ideas of booking and stuff behind the scenes for NWA. And he kept begging me to come work for him, come work for him, work for me. I'll let you wrestle. I'll pay you. I'll do this. I'll do that. And one show, I was like, all right, well, he booked me, and I was like, fuck it, I'll do it. And I went and did it. And I think that really pissed him off, because it was a Night of an Arena show. So I'm sure that kind of really pissed him off when they saw I didn't show up and they heard I was over the bridge. And also, too, I never, you know, I only did the Philly area shows like within like an hour, hour and a half of my house. I didn't go to none of the New York shows because, again, I was working at a pizza shop, and I would take if I took off on a Friday or Saturday night to go to New York, I would have lost, you know, $200-$300 between travel and losing my pay, and I couldn't afford to do it. So, you know, I only showed up to the Philly show, so they never knew really when I was going to show up. But they also, too, you know, they never talked to me about anything, and they never, you know, it's, you know, just as much my fault as their fault. And they probably at that point, and even early on, just saw me as sideshow talent, so they didn't need to have that talk with me.
Yeah. So, well, how did it come about when your time with ECW ended?
I just stopped showing up.
Okay. That was after
Spike came in.
Uh-huh.
And you know, Spike's first night at the arena, he's getting a match, and he's getting this, and he's getting that. I'm like, wow, this is really fucked up now. And I was really getting bitter and salty, and I just wanted, again, all I asked for and I expected was just a chance, and I was never given the chance. I think I was given one match. They needed somebody in an opening match, and I tagged up with El Puerto Ricano against the Bad Crew. And it was opening match up in Jim Thorpe, PA. And it was a match where at the end, before the finish even happened, Sandman hit the ring and started caning everybody. Man. And I knew Hack, again, from day one at wrestling school, going back to the TWA days. And Hack said to me, he goes, when I hit that ring, feed to me first. I'll hit you first. Take that powder and get the hell out of there. He's like, you don't belong in there, and I'm going to beat their ass. I was like, all right, thank you. And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah. So, I mean, after you stopped showing, did anybody reach out to you? Stevie or anybody call you and say, hey, what's going on?
The only one was Taz. You know, because I had started working for Caraluzzo. I was working for the NWA, and I was taking indie bookings. And he was putting me in matches with other ECW guys like Jason Knight, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And Taz called me. I don't even know how he knew where I worked. I would like to know that. And I would love to talk to Taz and do an interview with him myself and find out who told you where I worked, and how did you know, and how did you get the phone number? And he called up and threatened me if I kept, doing the Dudley gimmick he was going to come, which I don't understand, but he was going to come and stretch my ass, was his exact words. And I'm like, are you going to come and show up to a show and put me in a submission hole? Like, what do you mean? Are you going to come beat my ass? Like, what was it going to be? Like, which, don't get me wrong, if he did, he probably would have beat my ass. But I just wanted to know, like, was it, what he be, what should I be prepared for? The submission hold or the ass beating?
Yeah. Just give me a heads up here.
Yeah.
So yeah, you talked about, you mentioned Bubba Ray, and let's talk about Bubba Ray just for a sec, because he's turned out in retrospect after this career. I mean, to have a great mind, right, for the business. Yeah. And had his great career. What was he like there early in his career? You saw him kind of at the, you said he was green, but could you see sparks of that? I mean, the drive, the talent, the intelligence.
And I could say the exact same thing for both Bubba and Devon. When they came in, they were both green, and I saw them put the work in. You know what I mean? And I saw them being very intuitive and questions and asking and watching and learning. And in the year and a half I was there, I saw a huge transition in that short time of their in-ring talent to where it was like, you know, these guys are the real deal now. Like I went from saying to myself, like, oh yeah, like I deserve a shot because I'm a better worker at this point, to, you know, 6-9 months down the road, I was like, yeah, they're blowing me away now, and they earned the shot. You know, they earned it, deserved it. And, you know, all of the, you know, however you want to put it, all the, everything they got in this business, every belt, every accolade, everything they've gotten in every promotion they've worked for is well-deserved and earned, because they're two guys that busted their ass beyond belief and went out there and truly was blood, sweat, and tears for the business.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about, we brought up Big Dick Dudley, and you talked about how early on he was kind of the focal point. And a lot of people kind of forget that and forget about him a little bit. He passed away in 2002, but everybody always talks real highly of Big Dick and how he was such a good guy behind the scenes.
He was.
Yeah, what kind of memories you have of him? Not necessarily even in the ring, but like I said, kind of behind the scenes with you guys.
He was truly he was a big brother to us. He was a very, very fun guy, nice guy, caring guy. I felt a true sense that he truly took a care for all of us as a brother, and it became, you know, like a family thing. I truly felt that with him, especially. There was one memory very, very early on, where we were now at the Travelodge, and he was drunk, and he was like walking around the bar and the hotel, the lobby and everything. And he was like totally playing up the Big Dick gimmick and was growling. And like, if people were near us, he would go over and push them out of the way. It was like a whole, like he was really trying to put the gimmick over, but he was also drunk too. And then they were like, he started throwing bottles and stuff. So it got a little out of hand, yeah. but he was always, I thought, a beautiful, caring person. And I felt, you know, the whole Big Dick Dudley gimmick was true. Yeah. As, you know, a big brother. And I mean, he was a true, beautiful person, I felt.
Yeah.
And I can't believe it's over 20 years since he passed away. That's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Time gets away. Yeah. And you brought up the Travelodge, and I was going to ask you, it's obviously, it's notorious, right? The stories are infamous.
The cylinder of sin.
Yeah. The cylinder of sin. I'd like you to tell me a Travelodge story besides the Big Dick one you just said, but I obviously don't want to cost anybody their marriage or their or anything else. And but what kind of travel do you have? Anything you can tell me from the Travelodge that won't be overly incriminating to anybody and bury anybody as a person?
The stories of it was just complete, you know, debauchery, decadence, sex, drugs, rock and roll. It was complete mayhem. It really was. Yeah. It was like living a rock star life. I was like a low guy on the totem pole, you know. Yeah. And I would walk in there, and all of my alcohol would be paid for. Any drug I wanted was offered to me, and the females, you know, I would hook up with 2, 3, 4 girls in one night. It was just insane, the things that went on. And I was the nobody of the bunch. So that can just tell you what was going on with the bigger name guys that were coming in there. The fans truly treated us like, you know, superstars. It was unbelievable. But it was also, too, somebody asked me a question online the other day. And it was about the fans. It was on my YouTube channel. And somebody had commented and said they found out. They lived in Jersey, and they saw ECW wrestling on TV late one night, and they were 10 years old. And they started sneaking out of their house and taking the train at 10 years old over the bridge and coming to the arena. And they said that, after a few months of doing this, the fans started realizing, like, this little kid is by himself. But they kind of, like, took him in, and they started they found out what he was doing, and they started driving him back and forth. And I said, you know, that was the – right there was the prime example of the crowd. It was a family on both sides of the guardrail, because the fans, you know, yes, they treated us like stars, et cetera, but they also treated us like family. And – a lot of us bullies were the same way towards them too, because we knew how much they truly did, appreciate and care for us and love us. So I think that was a huge part of, you know, that made ECW magical. It was a family on both sides of the fence that made that ECW arena, you know, pure magic. And you know, so many promotions and federations have tried to run there, you know, over the last 20 years and try to recapture that magic, but nobody has ever had that magical element like ECW.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about the crowd. I mean, you had the same guy, I mean, the same core, right, that was there for all the, especially like the arena shows or the Elk shows or whatever, right? There's guys there. Mm-hmm. And even then or over time, some of them became just almost as big a character as some of the wrestlers, right?
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, you had Hat Guy, you know, and there was a Sign Guy, and there was, you know, I mean, Mike Johnson from PW Insider was always there.
Yep.
And all these guys. Were you aware of the regular guys? I mean, saw front row. Did you try to involve them a little bit? Did you try to, you know, wink at them a little bit and give them a little something? Did you pre-show talk to these guys? I mean, what was the interaction? I'm talking primarily those core guys that were there every single show at the arena or whatever. What was the interaction like?
Guys like Bailey, Hat Guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a legendary figure in Philly wrestling. Like, I remember going to NWA and WCW shows at the old Civic Center and always seeing Bailey there, not knowing him, because I was just a mark in the crowd and would just go, you know, every month or whenever I could go. And I would see him and just laugh my ass off. Like, because I always thought he was hysterical. So then, you know, once I got into the business and was around the whole TWA thing and then started working early ECW days and getting to meet him, you always knew, you know, this is where the term mark comes from, because when you're in the ring, you're going to pick your mark in the crowd. And Bailey was an easy mark to pick because he would give you that heat you needed. Yep. So a lot of those guys were like the easy marks. You knew you could go and play off them and it would work with the whole crowd. As far as I know, I mean, there was never any discussions pre-show or whatever, but I mean, there might have been, absolutely, for certain things and certain angles. So, yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, someone like, you know, what was Anthony, was it Tony Lewis? Is that his name? I can't remember. Is that his name? But help get the, you know, help get ECW. I mean, it's after your time. Help get ACW on pay-per-view, right? When they weren't going to get on, he lit up the petition. I mean, these guys were so integral.
Yeah.
And it was such a new thing where the crowd became like that third man in the ring, right? Their interaction. And it was kind of, that was new. It was fresh. It gave it that edge and that vibe. And you spoke of it too, though, that it was, hey, on the other side of the fence, it was the same way, the locker room.
Yeah.
Right. It everybody talks about how it was a family, how close knit it was. And this brotherhood, and you often hear it referred to, you know, this island of the misfit toys, right? The guys that nobody else wanted went to ECW, found their niche, found their gimmick, and made a career. You know, and everything else. I mean, here you are years later, still being known as Chubby Dudley, right, for your time there. Talk to us a little bit about that closeness in the locker room and that brotherhood and everything else.
You know, that's a scary sport. You brought up an important point to the whole thing too. And it seems even in the last year or two, the whole ECW thing, I think, is as popular now as it was 30 years ago, which is mind blowing. It seriously is. But the ECW locker room, it was truly family. You know, the basis, the core guys, and Paul in general. Paul, you can almost like say he was a cult leader, because he would give for those arena shows, he would give that locker room speech beforehand. And it was like, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid. He knew, or he would be like that perfect NFL or NHL, whatever, you know, sports coach to get his team to win the big game. He knew exactly what to say to get the charge out of every member, male or female, out of that locker room, to get them to go above and beyond they ever have before, and more each time. It's you know, and even as we're talking about it now, I still have chills up my spine, and I could still picture Paulie on the steps of the arena back in the locker room, you know, giving those speeches, and just thinking to myself, I'd go out and fucking kill somebody for this guy. Right. You know what I mean? Like it was so motivational. You know, he should be like a Tony Robbins, because he could go out there and do, you know, amazing things. And he again, it's 30 years later, this is why, because we were the Island of Misfit Toys. We were people that, you know, nobody believed in, nobody would give a chance to, but this mastermind of the pro wrestling world put the correct pieces of a puzzle together at the right time in life for everybody, and everything just would always click and work. And it was magic. It was, I can't even explain how magical those, you know, walking down that aisle at the ECW arena, you know, even I could be in my car, I could be in my house. Every time I hear AC/DC's Highway to Hell, I get chills up and down my spine, because I still picture myself walking down that aisle of the arena. And it's moments and memories that I'll never lose, but I can also never get back. It's right. Almost being like a drug addict. You can never recapture that. And that's a sad thing, because you saw a lot of those guys who, you know, got brought up to the big show, whether it was in WCW or WWF or E at the time, and they just couldn't recapture that magic, because
it didn't translate over.
It just didn't work.
ECW is it gets pigeonholed as, right, just this hardcore blood guts muppets, and yes, that was there, right, of course, but there was so much more to ECW. I think, you know, I mean, there was great match. I mean, just great, you know, technicians in there, right? It helped introduce Lucha Libre to the U.S. For bringing in some of the luchadors. But it truly, to me, it helped shape the direction of wrestling, because you saw WCW, you know, pulling from it. You, of course, the Attitude Era pulled from it. It totally reshaped the direction of wrestling. You know, and I can only imagine what your memories are, like you said, being a part of that now, and when you hear that song and just knowing that, hey, you were there. Right. On the right. I mean, you were there during some of the real hot years, too, when it was really starting to ignite. And you spoke about, you know, how that magic, and like you've recently, we talked about here in the last year, so you've recently kind of reemerged, right? Kind of started making some appearances and your YouTube show. So what kind of made you kind of come out and start embracing this a little bit and coming back in the public eye a little bit?
You know, it's funny, because I had relocated to Nashville about 6 months before the pandemic, and you know, whole wrestling, I was starting to resurface on the wrestling scene back in Philly at that point. I was doing commentary for my old promotion that I had started. My old business partner had restarted and asked me to be a commentator, so I was doing that, and then I was starting to get hit up for conventions again, and then I relocated to Nashville, so it kind of died out, and then we had the pandemic and all. But late last year, around Thanksgiving, because I do a podcast, another podcast as well, where it's the Bay Ragney Show, and I do like interviews, celebrity interviews, stuff like this, and a lot of music-based things. That's my other love is music. So I was interviewing a guy, Ray and Belcher, who used to play bass for Wednesday 13 of the Murder Dolls. And we had hit it off, and he's a huge, huge ECW wrestling fan. So we've become like best friends. It's so funny. So one night he shoots me a text like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. He's like, yo, you up? I'm like, yeah, what's up? You okay? He's like, I got to call you. I'm like, all right. And so he calls me and he goes, I got a brilliant idea. I'm like, okay. He's like, I just came back. He does like a lot of unplugged acoustic shows. That's that's how he makes a living. Right. He's like, I just got back from a gig. He's like, I've been laying in bed. I was watching ECW on YouTube. He's like, and then next thing I know, it's like 3-4 hours later and I'm still here and I'm watching it. He's like, I'm sucked in. I'm going down the rabbit hole and I'm saying to myself, what would it be like if Bay was watching this and telling everybody his thoughts on what's happening in the ring, what he knows behind the scenes and giving reactions and this and that and doing like a reaction channel to ECW TV. And I was like, holy shit, dude, you're a genius. Like this is amazing. So then when I started doing it, it started, you know, getting a little buzz and my Facebook started blowing up a little bit, and then people started hitting me up, and people started asking, you know, just the whole Chubby Dudley thing started reemerging. And then there's a guy who does wrestling trading cards, autographed trading cards. Then he hit me up, and so I have my trading cards now, and we're actually getting ready to do a triple shot card where it's me, Sign Guy, and Dances with Dudley. Dances just signed his batch and he sent it to a Sign Guy, and I'm the last one to get them. But I mean, just the whole Dudley thing is very much alive and well. And I am constantly asked at least one or two times a week, when is there going to be a Dudley Boys reunion at the at a convention somewhere?
Yeah.
And usually people hit me up, you know. It was very close to happening last fall at Icons of Wrestling in Philly at the arena. I was hit up by 5 different promoters that was trying to pull it together.
Yeah.
And it just never happened. And, you know, I know reasons why, which I'm not going to say.
Yeah,
but, you know, it will happen someplace, somewhere. It's just going to be a matter of the right time.
Yeah. I mean, well, let's see what we talk about. Am I wrong? Did the Dudleys come in 94 when they started, maybe? Is that right? Sound right?
95.
Okay, so we're a couple years out from that 30th anniversary. So who knows? I mean, you know, in 2025 will be 30 years. So, you know, I mean,
Scary thought.
Yeah, I mean, maybe something big can happen on the 30. But yeah, you talked about your podcast. You talked about your YouTube show, right? It's called React and Chill with Chubby Dudley, which you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
You told us what it's about. What's cool? It's a cool show. It's here to hear you talk about it. And what's fun, like you said, you're only about 10? You said 10 or so episodes in.
Yeah.
And you haven't even got to your stuff yet. It's gonna be pretty cool when you get to see your own stuff. And then you can really your time, because then you can really, right? You'll really have stories to tell then. So I mean, everybody needs to jump on now, you know, before you get to that time.
You know what's crazy, and I'm really blown away by, is the there's a huge fan base of people that were truly, truly fans and interested in the early Eastern Championship Wrestling stuff. And I mean, honestly, like, I kind of say why, because it wasn't good. And I say it as I'm watching these matches and these angles, and I'm just like, and I was not a fan of at all as it was going on. I was like, this is so bad.
Yeah.
I was honestly so disappointed. I was a huge, huge Eddie Gilbert mark.
Yeah.
And when Todd told me he was bringing Eddie in before the official announcement happened, I was freaking losing my mind. I was so excited and was like so happy. And then when Eddie came in and things were happening, I was like, this is garbage. This is not good. And I was so disappointed. But then I started seeing, like, then when he brought Paul in, plus those two were best friends, you know, I started seeing, like, a little change in direction.
Yep.
And I saw Paul was actually taking charge of things. I was like, oh, okay. But then, you know, the Hell Riders were phased out, and which understandable. Like, you know, you see our matches, we were not that good. So it's like, okay, I get it. I totally get it. But it's fun now, because now I'm at the point where they just started doing the arena show. They just did the first arena show. So I'm starting you can see and Road Warrior Hawk's there now. So things are changing. Yep. So it's starting to get a little exciting and a buzz to it.
Yeah, yeah. I've done watch through those early years before. You're just out of, you know, like you say, going down the rabbit hole. And it some of it is rough, but then it's fun when you can start seeing those pieces falling into place. Like you said, Paulie coming in, and then you see Joey Styles show up. You know, you're not quite there yet, but it, you know, Joey Styles coming in, and you start seeing that direction shifting a little, you know, and then eventually Eddie leaves and Paulie, you know Paulie's taking over. So it's kind of cool to see that evolution. So maybe that's what people are catching on, right? You see the roots, you see the evolution. So it's kind of cool to watch that journey. But like I said, everybody needs to go out, check out your YouTube channel. And all you gotta do is look up React to Chill with Chubby Dudley. Should be easy to come up. Give him a subscribe, right? Make sure you're watching those
things. Absolutely. And I honestly, like, I go through and I answer every question and comment on there. And it's a lot of fun. A lot of interesting conversation goes back and forth. I mean, there's sometimes like 30, 40 replies to one comment. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun, and people are really digging it. So, and I announced the other day, I'm like, I'm trying to get it really to blow it up. So I said the other day, I said, how about once I hit 500 subscribers, I think I need 115 or 16 more. But once I hit 500 subscribers, I'm going to do a live stream, and I'm going to bring anybody that wants to come on with me and ask questions. And, you know, I don't care if I'm there for 2-3 hours, whoever wants to hang out and ask ECW questions, I'm going to do it for everybody. And I think also too, I'm going to start doing some interviews on there with some of the old, you know, with the ECW guys, and bringing them on and letting them tell their stories and stuff like that. So,
yep. Well, there you go. Everybody help Chubby get the subscribe, help you get that push to 500. Join in on that live stream, right? Lots of good things coming there. So besides the YouTube channel, what's the best way for fans to kind of follow you online and on social media, keep up with any appearances, like you said, your trading cards that are coming up? What's the best way for them to follow all this and keep up on what you're doing?
I got the official Facebook page, Chubby Dudley Facebook page, or you can just, you know, look up Bay Ragney on Instagram or Facebook. I'm not hard to find.
Well, there you go. Very cool. I'll put a link in the show notes here to the YouTube channel. So everybody's easy. Click it, subscribe,
and
check him out. No problem. Chubby, thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking to us, memories. Well, maybe we'll do this down the road again.
Absolutely.
And until, you know, I'm sure you've got plenty more stories, but we can't take all day. Like you said, you got to record some of your stuff. So we'll do a part two down the road, but everybody stick around. We'll be right back on This Is Extreme.
Support This Is Extreme and buy the This Is Extreme shirt. Show the world that you are part of the revolution and that you support our podcast and the history of ECW. Go to tinyurl.com/ECW pod shirt and buy yours today.
This is extreme. All right, and welcome back to This Is Extreme. Thank you to Chubby Dudley for coming on and doing that interview with me. Like I said, it was great fun. Just had a blast talking to him. He's such a good guy. Check him out on social media. He's so fun. Go subscribe to his YouTube channel. Check him out. He's doing, like I said, if we spoke earlier, if you want something, it's a companion watch along series. There you go. Chubby's doing that on YouTube. So go check that out. Lots of fun. And again, hopefully we'll have him on again in the future. You know, talk a little more, have a little more story time with Chubby. So, thank you for listening, and whatever podcast platform you choose to listen to us, make sure you subscribe there. And if you can, give us a rating and review. That helps us in those algorithms where people listen to similar themed podcasts and we come up as a suggested listen. So help us out there and do that. Follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. All you have to do is look up ECW Pod, and we're on all those. So follow us on those platforms. I put up a lot of history and pictures of stuff up there. lots of things, you know, when title changes occur, events occur, you know, events that we don't get to talk about all the time on this show, those day-to-day things. I'm putting those up on their anniversaries. So lots of cool stuff. So just make sure you follow us on those, share those, help us network, help us get the word out about what we're doing here if you enjoy this, especially when I post those the posts about the new episodes. Share those and let all your friends, followers, whatever, know about the ECW pod. There might be someone out there who's interested, you know, it helps us if you help get us in front of their eyes so they can see what we're doing, and hopefully we can develop a relationship there and get a new listener. You can follow me personally on Twitter at The Dave Dynasty. I do other kind of wrestling history there. In my other wrestling podcast, Wrestling Nostalgia, is driven a lot on that Twitter account. So if you like, you know, if you want some other wrestling content that's not ECW specific and lots of historical stuff, especially I'm a huge fan of the WWA Indianapolis. That was kind of my home territory to watch when I was a kid. On the tail end there. So a lot of that, but there's lots of other wrestling history stuff that I post. So follow me on Twitter there. One of the best ways you can follow this show, one of the best ways you can support this show is by buying one of our shirts. It is a This Is Extreme shirt, very cool looking in the ECW font. It shows that you are a supporter both of the show and of the ECW extreme style of wrestling. Just go to tinyurl.com/ECW podshirt. Order you one of those. That helps us out a lot. It helps, you know, pay the bills around here for our hosting and everything else. Thank you again for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you to Chubby Dudley once more for coming on and doing that interview with me. We will be back in 2 weeks with another episode of This Is Extreme. More than likely with another great guest. If we have another guest, they'll be great. I have no doubts about that. But until then, and wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep it extreme.